Well, good morning and welcome to Mornings for the Master. I'm your host, Preston McElyea, and today I'm coming at you recording from the gospelradionetwork.org studio in Mount Vernon, Texas, at the Mount Vernon Church of Christ. I'm thankful to have the opportunity again this week to be here with you and to host this show. I have another guest with us this week. Guest, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is J.J. Hendricks, and I'm the Family Involvement Minister at the Northwest Church of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas.
Well, J.J., I'm glad you're here, and J.J. is certainly a humble man. J.J. does many things, and he wears many hats, and one of the things J.J. did not mention is he is adjunct faculty at the Brown Trail School of Preaching, where J.J. teaches a class there. He's a great geography teacher. He taught me as we were going through school, but also JJ and I are very good friends, and I'm thankful for his friendship and his wisdom. He's a man, if you know him, if you're friends with him on Facebook, anything like that, you know that JJ is a joy to be around. He always lights up the room, and even though you cannot see this video that we're doing right now as we're recording together, JJ is lighting up his office. He's got a very bright light back behind him and above him right now. So that's some good lighting you have in there, JJ.
Thank you. It came with the office. So
those LED fluorescents do wonders, do they not?
Absolutely. Makes my hair look pretty nice too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Got a little bit, looks like I got a little bit of that wisdom, that Robert Dotson gray right around the temples, the professor look.
That's a wonderful thing. And yeah, JJ working there at Northwest, he works with Brother Robert Dotson and Brother Spencer Ross as well, who does some good mission work. And so JJ, like I say, he's a very busy man. He works at a wonderful congregation with great elders and a lot of good works going on there. And so I'm thankful, JJ, that you were able to take a little bit of time out of your busy schedule to sit down and to record this show with me today. Thank you for being here.
No, I'm excited to do it. You know, Chris Groda and I had, I think we had a show with TGRN for about 3 years. We did Mornings for the Master, you know, I think two of those years. And then we did a show called Welcome Home. It was a show about the home. And so we've got a lot of history with TGRN.
So I guess you could say that this is your comeback tour right now.
Hey, there we go.
Well, JJ, before we get into our program, I discussed with you that we wanted to talk a little bit about some of the works that you've been involved with recently, and I guess most recently over the weekend, Easter weekend, for those of you who've been listening. JJ, you were rather involved in a great event. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure thing. We had our Lads to Leaders Convention this past week. We're at a new place, the Omni in Fort Worth. Absolutely blew the Gaylord Texan out of the water in every possible way. The staff at the Omni were present and active. If I told the guy in charge, hey, we need a 6-foot table over here, it was there in minutes. We weren't walking a half mile to get to our room. The convention center was this on the second floor, and our rooms were above it. So we could get from our room down to down to Texas Ballroom EF, where we did all of our main things. We were able to get there in about 45 seconds. It was a big difference than the 40 minutes round trip.
Yeah, that's nice.
Oh, yeah. Now, on the spiritual side of it, it was just a phenomenal year. We had a great theme, Be Strong and Courageous, from the book of Joshua. Had right around 2,000 people in attendance.
Oh, wow.
And it was very nice. A lot of familiar faces. Basically, was a reunion in many ways for Camp Ida Session 4, you know, the leadership session. Had a lot of people there. I had, I think, Macy Bess went across the stage about 20 times. She got the DECA award. That's in 10 years. She has memorized 100 scriptures a year. So she has memorized 1,000 scriptures.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she was one of the ones last year. Remember that they did 80 questions in a row for their tiebreaker in the Bible Bowl? She was one of them. And you know, just a whole lot of really good families there. And we were able to do a little bit of recruiting for Camp Ida. And we've got some new faces that are coming in. And, you know, it was my last year to do speech. So I've done speech for 9 years with L2L and gave my last meeting, had some fun with it. Everything went smoothly. No real hiccups this year, or maybe some hiccups, but no train wrecks. But L2L was a great experience, and I'm already looking forward to next year's convention. We're going to be covering Ezra and Nehemiah as the Bible Bowl books, and I believe the theme is Rise Up and Build.
That ought to be great. And I know you mentioned briefly there about working with the speech and that. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what that involves for those who participate in that particular event?
Sure. What we end up having with speech is we separate the boys and the girls. Men are not allowed in the rooms that the girls deliver their speeches. And some people will say, well, why do you have girls doing speeches anyway? Well, one, I believe it's great that we have more ladies' days, but two, they're going to need to learn how to speak in public anyway. I believe the number one fear in America is public speaking, and number two is death. So people would rather be in the box than presiding over the box. So we're training our kids to be able to get up in front of people and talk about the most important thing that there is, and that's the Bible. My little Evelyn, who's 2 years old, gave a speech this year. And wow. I remember Lily being scared. I mean, she melted down the first year she tried to do it. I believe she was three. And this year she got first place and was comfortable and excited. And, you know, experience isn't something you have until right after you need it. But the kids have, depending on the age group, between, you know, 3.5 and I think the high end is 5.5 or 6.5 minutes with the older kids. And, you know, you talk about the theme for the year, you develop a devotional thought. We have judges in there. Those judges are not professional judges. They're volunteers that are with the congregations that are there. And what you and I might think was, oh, wow, that was an awesome speech. Somebody else might go, well, you know, they could have done this a little bit better. And that's the beauty of L2L is I always tell the kids, you're already a winner because you're serving God.
Absolutely.
And it's not about the trophies. I said, I'll buy you 10. They're like, they're cheap trophies. Mm-hmm. Vincent won a trophy a few years ago for year-round song leading and broke it within 20 seconds. Luckily, I got a picture at about the 10-second mark. But it's one of those things that, you know, it always aggravates me to know. And people are like, we don't think there should be competition in Christians. It's like life is competition. If you're going for a preaching job, you're competing with another preacher. I mean, if you're going for a job, like a livelihood, a position that's come open, you're in competition with those other people. It comes to baseball. That's a competition. One team is going to win. I mean, hopefully, unless it's the All-Star game from, 10 years ago. Well, you remember that at all? Yeah, that was special. But what better place to learn to compete than in a Christian environment? Mm-hmm. How to gracefully win, how to graciously lose. I mean, there's no better place for that, and to learn it in that type of environment is only going to help kids when they return to school and they compete in sporting events. And, you know, we got some parents that could really take a dose of learning that sort of thing, that some Christians go out to those ball games and all of a sudden they don't sound like Christians anymore, all because an umpire, quote unquote, missed a call that they thought was blatantly obvious. It's, you know, everybody at every age group can utilize L2L.
Oh, yeah.
And there's different events. One of the events that you look is Keepers and Providers. It's events for girls and boys. And one of the ones that's for keepers is for the girls called cooking. And it makes me think about my grandmother in a way. She passed away in 1995. She was one of my favorite family members, and she absolutely loved me. And as a grandmother should. And the year before she died, I got to spend 3 weeks with her in the summer, and it was just amazing. And the reason I say this is she made pecan pie. And Preston, I'm telling you, the best pecan pie you've ever had. You can do pecan pie, can come out dry or it can come out soupy. And oftentimes it's one or the other. And hers was perfect. But when she passed away from pancreatic cancer, so did the pecan pies in a way, is nobody else could make it like she did. So if you have keepers now, you're getting the older women in the congregation teaching the younger women their special recipes, things that wouldn't be passed on. And when they're preparing those meals, they're not just talking about sweet potato pie. You know, they're talking about life, and they're talking about, I remember when I was dating, and, you know, when I was looking for a husband, these were the things that I thought about. And that's why L2L is such a great, you know, congregational program. And, you know, there are a lot of naysayers about, not a lot, there are naysayers about the L2L program. Some people will call it a parachurch organization, but the people that say that, I don't think they know what a parachurch organization is, much less they can hardly spell parachurch organization. And, you know, there's some people that don't like it. They don't like that you have to pay to go, but they'll have no problem dropping $200 for Junior to be on a travel ball team and pay for tickets. It's a consistency issue. We look at Matthew 6:33, seek first the kingdom of God. And if there is an activity that has been proven to help kids in their growth in the word and in their growth in service, and are more likely to stay faithful going into an adult, into adulthood, that is far more important than any drama team, any band competition, any baseball, any basketball. I mean, anything along those lines. I believe it said that only 2% of athletes will make it to the professional level. 100% of everybody is going to stand before God on the day of judgment. And we need to be preparing people for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things I really appreciate about Lads to Leaders is as you hit on the fact that it's not just for the kids, that it's something to get everybody involved. And like you were talking about with the Keepers program and everything in that, that can get people who maybe don't have kids, maybe they don't have grandkids in the congregation. It can get those older ladies who are special, who mean so much to everyone in that congregation. And it can give them a way to get involved. And I'm not laughing about Lads to Leaders for those of you who are listening. JJ, he had quite the sneeze that he had on the other end of our video call.
But, no, brother, that was pure coughing.
Well, I'm just thankful that you had the foresight to go ahead and mute the mic there, because that really would have thrown all of our listeners off at that point.
Yeah, I was lucky with quick reflexes. I got reflexes like a cat. That's why my friends call me Whiskers.
Well, that's like I mentioned earlier. If you know JJ, he's certainly a joy to be around, and he is full of jokes. That's a good thing. He can always lighten the mood. But no, absolutely, Lads to Leaders is a great program. And I'd encourage you to look into it more, to get more information on that if you or your congregation are interested. Of course, JJ, he primarily was talking about the Dallas Convention, or I guess the Fort Worth Convention now is what it is, at the Omni Hotel. And Lads to Leaders takes place every year on Easter weekend. Is that right?
Yes, sir. And, you know, we celebrate the death, burial, and resurrection every week per Acts chapter 20 and verse 7 and Acts chapter 2, verse 42. And traditionally, hotels have trouble getting people to buy hotel rooms during Easter weekend. So everything works together in that being a good time for us to go out. And, you know, it's so interesting. You'll have people that'll claim Christ, and on Easter Sunday, they'll decide not to go worship him and, you know, go out and, you know, take family pictures and have a family lunch. It's like, are you listening to yourself? I mean, that It's like, I don't want to go worship God on today of all days. I know it's time for family. And you know, I'm all about family. I got five kids, but, you know, we need to be consistent.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing, too, is even talking about it being on Easter weekend, bleeding over into Sunday. You know, rightfully, like you noted, that we're celebrating and remembering the resurrection of Jesus each and every week as we partake of the Lord's Supper. But part of Lads to Leaders, there is a very special thing that doesn't happen all the time on Sunday morning, and that's the fact that you have brethren from all over who are still there at the convention that have stayed on Saturday night and all worship together on Sunday morning. How many did y'all have this year for that service, JJ?
I would guess around 500. And Cooper Clements, who is a Camp Ida Session 4 guy, he did one of the devotionals. We had the oldest boy, the Johnson boy over from North Jefferson, he did one of them. Butler Matthews from out at Blossom, he did one of them. I picked all three of those guys. And that Butler Matthews, he's a special kid. I don't know if you've been able to spend much time with him, but I was already telling him, I'm like, you need to be preparing to go to preaching school. You have all of this ability. He just did a phenomenal job. I offered the prayers and comments before the Lord's Supper, and I did the prayers, and then we had the songs from the other kids and the lessons, and Spencer offered the invitation, and Jeff Watley. I love Jeff Watley. I believe he was there. Jeff Watley's a good brother. I love Jeff Watley.
He's a good guy.
Man, I'm just following the bouncing rubber ball today. There's just no streamlining, but man, Jeff Watley is one of my favorite preachers. He could read the phone book and I'm getting excited about who lives on Third Street. I mean, he just has that excitement that when he shares the gospel, and when you just talk to him, he makes you feel like you're one of the most important people in his life. And it's genuine. It's not him faking. Jeff is just such a good guy.
Well, he really is. If you've never met Jeff Watley, he is the picture of who Barnabas was.
Hell yeah.
He really is one of the greatest encouragers that I've ever met.
So if he sees a member who needs their yard mowed and they don't have anybody to do it, he loads up his lawnmower and he goes and does it. He knows the need that's there. And in so many ways, I wish I was more like Jeff. And this isn't in our notes to cover Jeff Watley, but man, I mean, he's a delight. He does the bonfire lesson every year at Ida, Camp Ida Session 4, because the excitement he brings in tying up the theme, I mean, it just doesn't get much better than Jeff Watley. But as Jeff Jenkins is the one that, you know, offered the closing thoughts, and I'm already excited for L2L next year.
Well, awesome. Awesome. And we've really kind of been plugging Camp Ida quite a bit as we've been going through, because so many of the people who are at our session of Camp Ida Session 4 are involved in Lads to Leaders. There's that connection there. And like you mentioned, whenever we got started with the recording, that this year's convention at Lads to Leaders was a reunion of sorts for Camp Ida Session 4. We talked about some of our campers, Macy Best being there and excelling in that and showing the great spiritual growth that she's had. Cooper Clements mentioned him. And of course, we were just really hyping up our brother Jeff Watley because he deserves that hype, and all of these good things going on. So, JJ, why don't we talk a little bit about Camp Ida Session 4? Do you want to tell us more about that?
Sure. You know, I was already a Lads to Leaders guy. I'd done Lads to Leaders for a few years at that point, and I had just moved to Mount Pleasant. And Chris Grota, another good brother, Chris Grota says, hey, there's a cleanup out at Camp Ida. You want to go? And I'm like, sure. Because I had taught some classes out there when Brian Braswell had a session. So I go out there and I'm talking to the former manager of the camp, and he's like, you know, we got this week at the end of June that stays open. You know, we got some kids that go to another event, and, you know, nobody really wants that week. And I'm like, well, I'll take that week. I'd like to do something with, with leadership and, you know, how to lead songs and how to give devotionals and all that. And he said, okay. And, you know, we started, I think in 2015 was our first year. So this will make our eighth session that we've done, including the online session during COVID. And it's just gotten bigger and bigger. This year, it won't be as big as last year because we've lost some of the facility space that we had. But as of right now, we have 58 campers and we top it out at 64. So all our girls, we have a wait list on the girls' side, and we only have a couple of beds left for the boys. I mean, it's, wow. Yeah, we're only looking at six spots left, six bunks. And that lets you know that, I mean, these kids, their parents aren't making them go. They want to be there. And it's, I believe it's a camp that really reaches out to the cream of the crop. I believe there's a place for different types of church camps. You've got some camps that they run it like it's, you know, vacation. It's, you have a Bible class or two, but you're spending other hours of the day, you know, letting kids bond and play games. And, you know, while that's not really my style, it's important to have a camp for that, especially for kids who are unchurched. It's a great place to bring your friends, to get them to know the rest of the members of your youth group. I can see and appreciate it. Then there's other camps where you get more of a mixture of, you know, the fun times as well as the Bible. And that tends to be your traditional camp. And then our session is, I believe we have, what is it, six Bible classes a day? Let's look at Monday. You got speech. This year we're doing evangelism and speech. Patrick Hammock and Keely McCary are teaching the boys and the girls respectively. Then the next session will be Kenny Gardner starting his introduction to Greek. Randall Morris is calling the building right now. He's a good brother. Taught us both at the preaching school.
Yes, sir.
But can't answer the phone right now. But so we've got that. We got introduction to Greek with Kenny. We have our split service after lunch. We have worship after that. We have worship in the evening. We have morning devotional. So that's five different classes. They're not, none of them are an hour. Maybe the lesson at night could get close to that, but it's five distinct different types of lessons. And the kids that go eat it up. Mark Teske came for the first year. I've recruited him every year. I've wanted him to come just because Mark is such a special guy. And was an elder, is wise, is funny. I mean, I want to be like Mark Teske when I grow up. But Mark, after the camp, was like, I've never been to a session like that. No discipline problems, no modesty issues. And I said, we get the cream of the crop from about, you know, 30, 40 different youth groups. It's the ones that really want to grow and are serious about growing. So we've really created an environment conducive to trying new things. Many kids have done their very first devotional at Camp Ida. They've led their first song, and then they go home and they take those tools back with them to their home congregation.
Absolutely. And that's leadership session is a really special thing to me. JJ, that first year in 2015, you have some wonderful facial expressions when you're coughing or when you're yawning. I just need to not look at my computer screen. But no, it's like I say, in 2015, that first year of leadership session, that was my senior year of high school. And so I had just graduated, and at Camp Ida, one of the rules is that you're able to come back and be a camper the year after you graduate, or the summer immediately after you graduate. And so I was able to go and to be a camper, and being the first year, it was a little bit of a smaller session than what we're looking at this coming year. But I'm thankful that after that, every year, JJ, you've invited me to come back and have me helping you direct the session now with my wife, Autumn. And that's another special thing about the camp is I really got to
bring that up.
Yeah, I really got to know my wife at Camp Ida, and that's where our relationship really began. And now we've got a little one on the way. So JJ, you've had a big part in that. Leadership session is a special thing to both myself and my wife.
Oh, yeah. And that reminds me, I remember when you were, you know, ready to start college, and I'm looking to build my staff. And Autumn was on Twitter and just is hilarious. So I called you and I'm like, what do you know about this Autumn Osborne? She makes me laugh on Twitter. Is she a faithful Christian? And you were like, yeah, she comes from a good congregation. And, you know, y'all come get together at camp and everybody sees the chemistry. And I was trying to help push you in that right direction. And I'm like, Preston, ask her to be your girlfriend and I'll buy fireworks. And you're turning like 100 shades of red. Just really embarrassed you. Well, y'all start dating and you call me a couple of years later. Hey, you're the director. I want to let you know this. I plan on proposing to Autumn at camp. And I went, can I buy fireworks? And you were like, there's never been a more appropriate time. So, I mean, you get the cream of the crop from all these different places and you're getting, you know, the best of the best. And it's people meet each other and they develop, you know, relationships. You know, Tyler Bush and Ray Lynn, his wife, you know, they met at session four. Mm-hmm. They proposed out at Camp Ida too. And so you put people in a position to succeed. It's not a dating week, but when you're running as hard as you can toward God and you see somebody else that's running just as hard, the wheels start a turning.
Well, and that's the thing about leadership session is the staff that you bring in to be there to help the kids, that there's already a layer that Camp Ida puts in place that is different from a lot of other camps, that no matter what session you go to, there are certain questions that have to be answered that deal with doctrine, that deal with the Bible, to make sure that whether you're just someone who's there to pick up trash on the grounds all week, or if you are somebody who is there in the who's in the cabin with the kids every single day.
Oh, I'm the director and I have to do it too.
Right. You have to be sound to go out to the camp, but then with the leadership session, because of the direction that it takes, well, JJ, you do a great job of making sure that you're bringing in not just people who are doctrinally sound, but people who want to work and people who really want to devote themselves to making others better. And that applies certainly to the kids, but it's also in a lot of ways a very refreshing week for all of us who work on staff, because we're able to get the help that we need from each other as well.
Oh, and let's just look at the staff. Let's look at the people that we've had that are coming in. I mean, Mark Teske's coming in. John Ratliff preaches up in Prescott. Ashley Earle, a tireless worker from over at North Jefferson, she's our cook, and it's amazing. Patrick Hammock, you know, brilliant guy. Spencer Ross teaches in about 15 preaching schools around the world. He's coming in this year. Jeremy Sprouse, another teacher at Brown Trail. David Williams is an elder. Tyler Bush, who we've talked about, is one of the ministers at Centerville Road. Christy Huntsman has written about 10 books. Her and Aaron Sprouse, they're both coming. And they've both done multiple ladies' days. I mean, Jeff Watley, who we talked about earlier, he's coming. His son is a counselor, and Jeff's wife is a counselor. We're getting all three Watleys, baby.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, Chris Grote is coming in. He's a friend of the show. And Chris Grote is an amazing evangelism guy. And, I mean, that's just the ones who filled out the registration. If you're listening and you hadn't done that yet, let's go ahead and get that done. And I'll talk good about you on the radio.
Absolutely. And that's it's always a great week out there. And we're always tired when the week is over. But at the same time, we're completely refreshed by it and the great lessons that we get by the good fellowship. And if you have any kids or any grandkids, JJ mentioned that we're filled up on the girls' side of things, but we still have some openings on the guys' side. And even if it is a girl, there is that wait list in case somebody ends up not being able to make it and we get a big enough heads up. I'd encourage you to go to campida.org. Again, that is campida.org. And from there, you'll be able to find some more information about other sessions. But We encourage you to check out Camp Ida Session 4, the leadership session. The dates for that this year are going to be June 26th through July 1st. And our theme is going to be wildfire. And JJ talked about the direction we'll have towards evangelism, that if we can plant the seed, that if we can get on fire for it ourselves, then we can help it spread like a wildfire. And so that's the direction we'll be going. And you can find the registration for Camp Ida at campida.org. Is there anything else you want to add to that, JJ?
Not really. But, you know, as a graduate of the Brown Trail School of Preaching, you know, there were a lot of people that had influence on me. And, you know, Robert Stapleton was one of those. Perry Cotham, Gerald Ball. All three who have passed on to their reward, I feel that they are in paradise cheering us on, ready for us to get there with them. And I think about, you know, the things they taught me and the things they taught me that I teach others. Imagine being in the first century and Christianity is so new and you're waiting on Jesus to come back and somebody passes away and you're like, oh no. They've missed it. That they're not here for when Jesus returns. Where are they spending eternity? And it makes me so glad that we have letters like the ones that we have from Paul that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the biggest messages and one of the biggest takeaways that we can get from the book of 1 Thessalonians. And of course, Paul deals primarily with that aspect of what happens when one passes away. What do we do? How do we continue on once we get into chapter 4 and verses 13 and following? And so everything is really working up and building up to that point. But if you've been following along with our program over the past couple of weeks, then you know the some of the things we've discussed out of chapter 1 as we've finished up that chapter, and even last week as we moved into chapter 2. Last week, I had Brother David Sudhoff on the program with me, JJ, and David and myself, we discussed verses 1 through 6 and had a good discussion there. David, another one who's from Brown Trail. In a lot of ways, this program is becoming a Brown Trail program. Nothing wrong with that, but that's where a lot of the connections are anyway. But today on our program, with the time that we have left, JJ and I are going to start discussing in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, starting in verse 7. And in the context of what's going on at this point, Paul is really reviewing his relationship with the brethren in Thessalonica. He's been talking to them about the work that he, Silvanus, and Timothy did while they were there in the midst of those brethren in Thessalonica. And so when we look, starting in verse 7, going into verse 9, we find that Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy were genuine and sincere in the work that they did. JJ, if you have that there on your end, would you be able to read 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 7 through 9 for us?
Absolutely. For the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Only he who now restrains it will do so until he is out of the way. And then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord Jesus will kill with the breath of his mouth and bring to nothing by the appearance of his coming. The coming of the lawless one is by the activity of Satan with all power and false signs and wonders.
Well, JJ, you you are an excellent Bible reader, but I can tell by your facial expression that you maybe realize what you have done.
Stopped in the middle of a verse.
Well, not just that, but we're in 1 Thessalonians.
Hey, I'm gonna check my email and see what you sent me.
I may very well have sent you the wrong thing, and
we're gonna confirm it. Let's look. Nope, it was me. But we're both wrong. You sent me 1 Thessalonians 2:1-6.
So we're both messed up. Well, see, I've started this trend where when I'm having people on the show, I like to ask them like the day of, and I at least gave you the common courtesy of giving you a few hours before we recorded,
I'm still excited to be here. So this is fun.
Everybody else I've talked to, I gave them about 15 minutes of a heads up notice. And so, you know, I didn't want to give you that much of a leg up on everybody else, but no,
I'm getting older and, you know, I need just a little bit more time. David's still a young guy, so he doesn't need that time, but the passage of scripture I read, so good. Not by me. Now the reading was fine, but the word of God, so rich. Well, but where 7 to 9, you said?
Yes, sir. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2.
First, let me make sure. Yeah, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. We're reading from the English Standard Version, starting in verse 7. But we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. For you remember, brothers, our labor and toil. We worked night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you while we proclaimed to you the gospel of God. You know what that brings me back to, Preston?
What's that take you back to, brother?
How the church was established in Thessalonica.
Absolutely.
And the riots that occurred. And, you know, it happens today still. Is, remember, they were like paying people to start riots. And then they're like, they as in the bad guys, the Pharisees, they were paying people to start riots, and then they're going, look what the Christians have done. They've turned the world on its head. And it's the same thing that happens today. Is we got so many people that something bad will happen. It's like the Antifa people, the ones that say they're anti-fascist, that will hit people with bike locks to get them not to talk, which is fascism. Purposefully trying to silence someone else. And it's just outright dishonesty. And that is where the church was established, in Thessalonica, through just this insane oppression and violence. And then we read something like this: we were gentle with you. You know, they weren't the ones that were turning the world upside down. We desired you. We're ready to not only share the gospel, but we wanted you to be with us. We wanted you to be our friends. So often people in the church get the bad rap that we baptize somebody and we're done with them. And our desire should be to baptize them into Christ and make them our best friend. Make your Christians your best friends, and make your best friends Christians.
Absolutely. And Paul Silvanus and Timothy, they exemplified that. They were the perfect picture of what we need to be doing when it comes to how it is we connect and relate and help teach those new converts. And I like what you're doing now to make sure that you cover up those facial expressions when something's happening. But
I'm still so tired from Lads to Leaders, man. I'm my brain must be deprived of some oxygen. I can't quit yawning.
That's all right.
It's not from a lack of enjoying what you're saying. You're a good brother and a lot of good information.
No, I completely understand. It's when the yawns hit, you can't stop them. They just keep coming. but no, like we were saying, the perfect picture of what needs to be done when we have those new converts in our midst and those with whom we've taught the gospel is we don't drop them like a hot potato.
I want to tell you about Natasha Schneider. I preached in Oklahoma for a little while, and one of the people I met, his mama said, hey, my son's in the hospital. Will you go and visit him? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Give me a heads up of who's where. I'll go. I'm not worried about it. And so I go up to the hospital and he's watching baseball. And Petey, you know me, I'm not much of a baseball guy. You know, the strike messed it up in the early 90s for me, but I can talk a little bit of anything with just about anybody. And I'm like, yeah, you like baseball? Yeah. What do you like about baseball? Yeah, I like this baseball. Well, how you doing spiritually, man? And he's like, oh, well, not real good, I don't guess. And he said it made him think. And he starts returning to church. And I believe it was around Mother's Day, he got his wife to come with him. And it was a Wednesday night. She'd come on a Sunday and she liked the preaching, and So she came on a Wednesday, and we're going, I'm doing a textual class on Acts chapter 2, and we're in Acts, and we're in chapter 2. And she's like, I want to study with you. When can I study with you? And I was like, I guess, you know, we could study on Monday. And she's like, what? I want to study sooner. I said, we can study tomorrow morning. And she goes, okay. So I just opened the study up with, what do you want to talk about? And she's asking, you know, how come you don't have women that preach? And we turn to the scripture. I tell her what's going on. I have her read the verses. And she's like, well, don't y'all use instruments? And I'm like, okay. So I tell her what's going on in the context. She reads the scripture herself. And she's like, I've never seen some of these verses before. And she's like, why do you think baptism's so important? And we start covering scriptures on baptism, Galatians 3:27, Colossians 2:12, Acts 2:38, Acts 22:16, Romans 6:3-5, 1 Peter 3:21, and just verses that are like that. And I'm having her read them, and she's seeing what they say. And I said, if you died right now, where would you go? She'd go, I'd go to hell. And big tear ran down her cheek. And throughout the study, I'd look over to her husband, and he's like giving me double thumbs up. Just like he's excited that she's thinking. And I said, well, what do you want to do? And she goes, I want to get baptized now. Preston, she walked from my office straight to the baptistry and walked in fully clothed. Didn't even change into anything else. We baptized her right then, right there. She is still faithful. And she's a member of the Westside congregation there in Idabel, Oklahoma now. And we developed a friendship. I studied with her and her husband between 6 and 8 hours a week after they obeyed the gospel. And it was only a couple of weeks ago that she called to talk and to ask some Bible questions. And that's what I like. So that's a long way for me to tell this story is that they didn't just want them to obey. They did. They wanted to know them. They wanted to get to know them. They wanted to share themselves. They wanted to develop friendships. And that's what we should desire mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, absolutely. They wanted what was best for the brethren there. And I think that shows even in the imagery that Paul uses by inspiration of the Holy Spirit when he says, and I pulled up my English Standard Version. That way we're not back and forth between English Standard and New King James here. But how it says there that they were just like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. That's not saying that, you know, that Paul, Silvanus, or Timothy were taking on the role of a woman or anything such as that. That's just a simile to show and to talk about what was being done. That you think about that nursing mother, that the purpose in that is that there's a closeness, there's care, there's love there. But at the same time, in the nurturing, in the feeding that's being done, the mother wants their child to grow. And that's what we should want from our new converts as well.
It's the nourishment. They're handling what they could handle, and that was the pure milk. And I've had a lot of children, and I have a lot of children. And I remember, you know, the day Evelyn was born, and I didn't think, oh, man, you know what that baby needs? Steak with A1 sauce. That day will come. After you know, the kids grow out of wanting hot dogs. They have missed out on so many delicious steaks because they want hot dogs or chicken nuggets, and they're going to look back and regret it, Preston. They are. But at no point did I think this baby needs a steak. No, that baby needed her mama's milk. And we need to consider that when dealing with new converts or weaker Christians is we don't need to demythologize eschatology just because we can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to be meeting people where they are. And that's why I love working with, you know, teenagers and young adults. It's not because I can't preach the heavy things and teach the heavy things. It's I want to train up. I understand the need to nourish and to help them to grow. And that's my favorite stuff.
Oh, absolutely. And in helping others grow at times, that requires a little bit of ourselves. That sometimes requires a little bit of a sacrifice from us. You know, you mentioned earlier with the example you gave that that from that time, and as long as you were there, there was the point where you were, you know, studying 6 to 8 hours a week with those brothers and that new sister. And that required something out of you. You had to be willing to give something up in order to help give them what they needed. And Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy, while it was a little bit of a different situation, they were still willing to do what needed to be done, even if that required giving of themselves. That's what we find even whenever we look in verse 8, when he said, "So being affectionately desirous of you." The idea there, if I'm not mistaken, being a true longing, that there's almost a yearning that's in place there, that you really and truly desire and want what is best. So that affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. That's a special thing, is it not?
Oh, it's amazing. It's so much is about relationships, and we really sell it short when you race in after church has started and then leave during the closing prayer, the closing song, and then sit back and go, how come nobody's my friend? To, as I teach my children, to have a friend, you have to be a friend.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that takes something. And at times it means that we're going to have to be willing to sacrifice what could be. You know, when Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy were there with the brethren in Thessalonica, they very well could have made demands. Paul talked about that in the previous section. They could have asked of specific things, certain things. They could have asked the brethren, demanded that they help support them in the work they were doing as they taught the gospel to them. But that's not what Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy did. In fact, when we look in verse 9, as you read for us just a little bit ago, we understand that the way that they gave up of themselves was that they were willing to work, that it wasn't just the case that they were teaching the gospel. Yes, that's a way they gave of themselves. Yes, that's a way that they would help the brethren grow, but they didn't want to be a stumbling block. They didn't want to take anything unnecessarily from the brethren there, and so they would work night and day to make sure that they would not be a burden and to make sure that the gospel would not be hindered.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's how we all should be. It's, you know, you hear of somebody in the hospital. You know, I've already talked about my father-in-law, Robert Stapleton, and we've talked about Jeff Jenkins, but Jeff would never let you know this happened, and I want to brag on him. Jeff is a tremendous personal worker. And I remember when my father-in-law was in the ER, Jeff texted me, "What's going on? How's he doing? What can we do?" And when I wasn't responding fast enough, he's calling me, "Hey, JJ, what's going on?" And I was able to tell him. I found out later, he went to the hospital and went up and prayed with him, all in private. I mean, he wasn't posting a selfie with my father-in-law like in the hospital to show that he was there. He did it because he cared about my father-in-law, and he cares about people, and it drives me to want to be a better minister to other people. Those are relationship building things. I care enough that if it's the middle of the night, I want to be there for someone if I can. And I mean, that will always endear me to Jeff, that he did that for our family, to love my father-in-law like that. It just was, it was the good stuff. He didn't have to do it. My father-in-law, I don't know if he ever even attended at Louisville when Jeff was the preacher there, but it was because they cared about each other that he went and ministered to him. It's just remarkable.
And that's the type of thing that when we make that who we are, that ministry is not just a work, but ministry is who we are. It's what we do. Those type of things shine forth because we understand that it's not about the likes or the shares or the comments we can get on Facebook. But we understand the reason we do what we do is because of what God has given us. And we know that God is always watching. That's where Paul would continue moving on into verse 10 as he talks more about the example. He says, "You are witnesses, and God also, how holy and righteous and blameless was our conduct toward you believers." It's not just that they acted this way towards the church in Thessalonica, but they would act this way towards everyone. It was just the Christians should have been the ones to recognize the type of character that they had. But even if the Christians didn't, Paul still understood that God knew, that God saw, and that God understood why it was they did what they did.
That ties it up with a bow right there.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing that we need to understand and take away from this ourselves, that there are going to be things we do that people will see, that people will recognize, but there will also be those things that nobody ever knows about.
There is somebody that does, and it's God.
Oh, absolutely. That's true. Yes. That's true. God knows. And when we stop and think about the day of judgment, this can be a pretty sobering thought, because how special is it to know that the one who is able to ultimately redeem you, the one who is able to take care of you, the one who's going to make sure that you can spend the eternity with him, that he knows what type of a person you are and what type of a character you had throughout your life. That can be a really good thing and a good advantage towards you. But that also can be very condemning, because God knows if that's not what your character was.
You can fake people out. You can't fake God out. God looks at the heart, much like he did with David when he made David king and removed the crown from Saul. And, you know, sometimes it can be upsetting when you see others who have bad behavior end up with opportunities, and you've got to sit back and think, well, they're getting their reward right now. They're getting the adulation from people that really don't know them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not getting, they're not being pleasing to God.
Absolutely. And we're quickly running out of time, but I do want to at least try and address these next two verses, verses 11 and 12. When Paul says, "For you know how, like a father with his children, we exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God, who calls you into his own kingdom and glory." So we see the picture here that Paul gives, that not only were they like that nursing mother, but they're also like a caring father who wants his children to grow up, especially as Christians, in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. And the way that that was done was through exhorting, by encouraging, and by charging them to walk in a manner worthy of God. That's what we need to be doing as Christians. And again, that's what we need to be doing as we develop those relationships, to encourage others to walk in a manner worthy of God.
It's like a father, and he addresses this perfectly, is I want my kids to go to heaven. So I'm going to encourage them in that direction by my actions. Sometimes I fail, but my main goal is for them to be, is to grow up to be Christians and to go to heaven. And it's just so wild that you think about families over the generations that, I mean, they become Sunday morning only Christians. That's the only time they have their act together. They let school, they let sports, they let everything in front of God as priorities. And then when their kids grow up and don't even want to be Sunday morning only Christians, that want to put those things first, they sit back and look everywhere except for their own example that they gave to their kids. And here we see what a good example can do and what a good example did for the Thessalonians. And to tie it back, we see what a good example happens. I don't know how many guys we've had go to the Camp Idle leadership session that have become preachers, or how many people went through L2L over the past 55 years that stayed faithful to God because of the examples of Dr. Zorn and so many others who have gone on before us. An example is so very important.
Absolutely. And that's what Paul was trying to emphasize in this section of 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, to make sure that the brethren in Thessalonica knew that they could trust in that example that they had seen through Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy. And so as we're wrapping up our program at this time, JJ, I'm thankful for your example. You do so much for the kingdom, and I know you work tirelessly in that. And I'm certainly thankful for all you do for the kingdom, all you do for me. And I'm thankful you were able to be on the program with us today, brother.
I'm thankful for you for all the same reasons and for your years of friendship, and I'm blessed to be able to serve with you today.
Yes, sir. And hopefully we'll be able to have you back on the program at another point in time that we can discuss some more of what's going on in the kingdom, discuss some more of the text. And I hope that, that we'll be able to do that soon. And hopefully all of you will continue listening to us here on Mornings for the Master. And I hope you'll keep listening to the Gospel Radio Network.org.